Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News, where today we're broadcasting live from the Freedom Phone Studios in Washington, D.C. Yes, we're big fans of the phone, and we've introduced you to a special discount offer. Check it out at justthenews.com/freedomphone. Really fun opportunity if you like a phone that has some additional privacy protection capabilities and also a commitment to apps that are free speech first. Well, then you've got the right phone here. Really fun stuff. We've brought Eric Finman on the show a couple times. Great guy and a young entrepreneur trying to make a difference. And the left has attacked him and technology companies have attacked him. But you know what? He's going strong because his heart is in the right place and his product has a lot of great features, including an operating system that's very unique. All right, folks. Today, we're going to take you back to the Ronald Reagan era. Yeah, that seems like a while ago, but it's a good conversation to have because wasn't that long ago that our military, our security thinkers, our private sector, our political leaders put country first, put security first, and didn't slough off, didn't make excuses for emerging clear and present dangers that may threaten our country. That's really how we won the Cold War, right? Without ever having to fire a shot. We don't have that mindset today. We hear so many Americans and American political leaders slough off, delay, kick the can down the road on things that are now real and present and clear dangers for our country. And of course, China is one of them. We had the great congressman on yesterday talking about the agricultural elements of what China is doing to gain land in America and squeeze our farmers and put America in an economic stranglehold with its own farmland. Think about that, using our own farmland against us, right? That's one small part. But today, we're going to bring in somebody who is going to open your eyes to a much larger vulnerability that China is seeking to exploit and that America is falling, by his own account, further and further behind. You may never have heard of him, but you have seen the extraordinary work he has done. His name is Ambassador Henry F. Cooper. He was one of the key players in the Strategic Defense Initiative, the Star Wars Initiative, that sought to protect us from Soviet missiles during the end of the Cold War. He became President Bush's chief negotiator on space and defense issues that were negotiated as the Soviet Union was falling apart and America was winning the Cold War. And for much of the last two decades, he has been focused on emerging threats that America is asleep at the switch at. And China, missile technology, EMP technology, have all been in his portfolio. He is one of the most cogent security and defense voices, not only in the United States, but in the world. And though he is in his older years, he brings great wisdom, great words of advice, and he sees an America that is more vulnerable today than at any point in its extraordinary and illustrious history. That's saying something, because we faced grave danger from the War of 1812 after the Revolution to the Civil War to World War I, World War II, the unilateral threat of terrorism. And he believes now that we are more naked, more danger than ever by ignoring where China is and what it is capable of doing without having to fire a shot. And these are pretty extraordinary words from a man that has 40 and 50 years of record behind him. So we're going to spend the whole hour with this extraordinary government leader, government thinker, strategic thinker, Ambassador Henry F. Cooper. coming up right after this commercial break. You know what, folks? Stress may be why you can't lose weight. If you've got moderate to high stress like I do, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement called Lean could be your solution. Chronic stress wreaks havoc on blood sugar, which can cause your body to store excess fat. Stress can also slow your metabolism, which fuels weight gain, and you know all about stress eating and sugar cravings, right? Now the good news. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Now, if your life is a bit stressful like mine and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Now get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com. That's takelean.com and enter the promo code JustNews15. That's the promo code JustNews15 at takelean.com. One more time, takelean.com. Statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and it's not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, someone whose commitment to his country and important work goes all the way back to the Reagan years during the SDI Star Wars project, the early efforts for America to defend itself against the growing threat of missiles. Joining us right now is Ambassador Henry Cooper, who was at one time the man who helped negotiate the space and defense treaties with the Soviet Union. Ambassador Cooper, it's so great to have you on the show.
Well, I'm pleased to be with you.
Your work is really historic, and you've been such an important voice in leaning into the future of security. A lot of times we live by the seat of our pants in America. We're only worried about the next few hours, the next few days, but you've always built a reputation as somebody who was looking out at the threat 10, 5, 10, 20 years out. And you've had some really powerful columns recently talking about the threat that China poses, particularly from a missile standpoint, and the vulnerability of our grid. And I want to just read something that started. You actually mentioned this in a column, but it was such an important quote from the top U.S. intelligence officer for the Pentagon for the Asia-Pacific region. He said this earlier this month, Rear Admiral Mike Studeman. He said, "I'm wondering in Washington how many folks are truly persuaded by the warning which the Intelligence Committee has already provided regarding the dangers that exist within this decade, soon, now, with regard to the nature of the Chinese threat and how it manifests and what we do about it. We would say the danger is clear and present already." What was Rear Admiral Mike Studeman talking about in that moment?
Well, it's on many fronts. Frankly, I'm sure that Mike was referring to. And by the way, I know him, knew his dad, who was the director of the National NSA.
So, wow.
I mean, he's been engaged in intelligence matters in entire life, Mike has. So in any case, China, I will tell you, you didn't mention it, but I was also the director of the Strategic Defense Initiative in the George Herbert Walker Bush administration.
That's right, for President Bush, right?
That's correct. And I had been defending it in our negotiations with the Soviet Union because the Soviets were very concerned about their inability to compete with our technology in that time period. And China was not really in the scene very much during that era either, in the Reagan administration nor the Bush administration, first Bush administration. And so while we considered it, we didn't concern ourselves with the threat. The problem was generated when at the end of the Bush administration, the Clinton administration came in and they immediately killed the SDI program.
Right.
And in particular, space programs. And it not only was a blow to us directly, but it enabled the Chinese in particular to take advantage of that technology, import it, and advance it. And frankly, they pursued the SDI space-based activities, whereas we dropped them during that administration, and subsequently no administration restored them. And that even includes the Trump administration that just was concluded. Mike Griffin, who was the, as you probably know, the top engineer in the Pentagon and previous administrator at NASA. And
right, of course.
He was my deputy for technology. And Mike and I have stayed friends, and we've talked back and forth about these issues over the years. And he tried to get, even during the Trump administration, some of that space activity revived, and we didn't. And China has pushed ahead with it, and now we're playing catch up to the technologies that we once led. I'm frankly more concerned about China than I am with Russia, although that may be find its source in the fact that I spent 5 years negotiating with the Soviet Union, and I may have a different, I mean, my perception may not be correct about Putin and his crowd today. But China has the economic power to really pull off these matters, and we have been ignoring the key technologies now for at least 20 years, and we're playing catch-up, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And so China's a major threat, and EMP, electromagnetic pulse, is a vulnerability that we have permitted to grow throughout our infrastructure, critical infrastructure upon which we depend. And probably there is no greater area than the electric power grid. And it is vulnerable. It is. I don't think anybody would dispute that, that knows anything about the grid. And we are ignoring it. There's not a penny, to my knowledge, being considered in all the stuff going on right now in Washington, where they're deliberating on so-called infrastructure, and including within whatever they're talking about is infrastructure, all manner of things that betray a serious lack of seriousness about discussion of infrastructure. And just imagine a world with no electricity.
Yeah.
Because that's what would happen.
We saw it for a couple of days in Texas during a storm, and we thought the world was coming to an end. Imagine if it was nationwide.
Exactly. Exactly. So in any case, that's my biggest worry, frankly. And while others can create this problem, in fact, anyone with a nuclear weapon can create that issue. And
right.
That includes North Korea, and it includes Iran, and of course, the Soviet Union and China, and even terrorists if they were, you know, became, you know, a lackey to one of these powers.
Right.
And that's not out of bounds in terms for consideration.
No. No, a freelance operation sponsored by a state is a very real possibility, our intelligence community has told us. This is a really remarkable moment because 30 years ago, we were in the forefront. Now we're hearing from you and many other skilled in the know people that we've fallen behind. And the budgets, the powers that be are not doing anything. And you're hearing military flag officers raising these questions saying, no one's taking us seriously. How did we get to this point?
I frankly don't know. I'm really disappointed in many in the Defense Department and others who aren't speaking up more frankly about these issues. And as you know, I think Jim Inhofe is trying to fight to get more money into the defense budget.
One of the few. Yeah. And then I guess Congresswoman Elaine Luria of Virginia has been raising some red flags, but it's like a very small number of people for such a very large threat. It is remarkable to me. I'd like to do a little education because you've done some of the best writing on this subject. And I think a lot of people forget about this, but I think it was 2013 in California, what I would call a small scale terror attack took a large part of the California electric grid off. And, you know, at the time, people were worried about other things. They weren't talking about this, and it didn't get the attention the media deserved. But it was a real harbinger, I think, of the potential vulnerabilities our grid had. And we're 8 years, 9 years from that episode where a lot of people in California were offline for several days. And it doesn't seem like our grid is that much more hardened from anything, from EMP, low scale terror attack, even cyber hacking. Who should be held accountable for the lack of attention to this threat?
Well, frankly, no one was in charge. I would say that's the case, and still aren't, frankly. During the Trump administration, he actually early on in his administration, made a statement that indicated he was going to view this issue differently. And he had an executive order in early 2019,
right.
I believe it was, putting the National Security Council in staff, in charge of these activities. and they sought to negotiate with the powers that be throughout the government, hopefully to get a whole of government response. And while there were some good things that were done, frankly, they didn't really achieve very much in the way of moving it ahead. Senator Ron Johnson, whom I'm sure you know, probably have interviewed, is one on Capitol Hill who gets this issue. He's been very supportive. Actually, Jim Inhofe has been supportive too, so on occasion. But I would say that Ron Johnson is the best informed senator on this subject. And he has tried to get this problem dealt with. He held hearings explicitly to deal with these issues, had Dr. George Baker,
right,
who after that hearing became a key staffer on the National Security Council staff trying to pull these issues together, did a fine job while he was there. But of course, with the change of administration, he is no longer there. And to my knowledge, he has not been replaced with anyone of equal stature or knowledge. So right now we're rudderless in the water on dealing with this issue during the Trump administration. I wish it weren't so, but that's a fact.
Yeah.
And when you ask how it came to be this way, we ignored the problem for far too long. We started to deal with it during the Trump era, but the institutions of the government really were not responsive. And I'm working on another article right now for Newsweek, Newsmax, detailing, you know, when Governor Granholm was going through her confirmation hearings, Senator Murkowski asked her quite explicitly questions about the grid. And she made clear she understood what the issues were in both the if I use bulk power grid, I don't know whether your listeners will know what that is, but those are the power plants and the high voltage transmission lines that deliver electricity throughout the nation,
right,
to a number of smaller companies and electrical co-ops around the nation. And they are the ones who deliver electricity to the individuals in the country, our hospitals, homes, businesses, emergency responders, all those folks who depend on electricity. They don't get their money, their delivery out of the transmission lines. They go through these transformers that I wrote about in the articles that you're talking about. And they're key elements of the grid that we have not protected. We haven't even tested to understand what their vulnerabilities are. And George Baker, when he was with the NSC, tried very hard to get something going in that area, but was not able to make it happen. And it's been blocked by the Department of Energy, among others. When Ms. Granholm was going through the confirmation hearings, Senator Murkowski asked her specifically about this problem in the context of the cyber threat.
Right.
But and she answered it, and she gave the direct answer. Over 90% of the grid are these distribution lines that aren't being dealt with. And she promised that she was going to deal with them in some fashion or other, if she became Secretary of Energy. Well, she's now been the Secretary of Energy for, I don't remember exactly how many months, but that was in January.
Yeah.
And so far as I know, nothing has happened.
Yeah, I can find no evidence either. The danger here, or the reality that we face, is that China, which, by the way, has EMP, electronic magnetic pulse technology, built into their military doctrine. It's actually included in the doctrine of China, that they could literally cripple the United States and take us down without ever having to fire a traditional military shot. And I think that's what some people like former Secretary of the Navy William Middendorf have said. There is such a malaise in Washington. It's as though every time we hear the word China, there's a larger number of people say they're friends still. They're still our friend. And what sort of education process do we need in America to understand that China poses to this generation of America the sort of threats that the Soviet Union posed to our Cold War era of America? It seems as though there's such a malaise about China that we don't seem to take it seriously, despite all the harbinger warnings of people like the Rear Admiral, yourself, and so many others. How did we get to be so, I hate to use the word, dumb on this subject?
I don't know. I guess we thought, the Cold War was over and we were going to have peace in our time. That was the, you remember Francis Frank Fukuyama
right?
wrote a book called The History, and thinking that it was all going to change. Well, and I must say, when I was running the SDI program, I worked with our allies, even worked with the former Soviets in Russia to do some comparable things together during that period. But that ball was dropped at the end of the Bush administration when the Clinton administration came in and went back to the Cold War idea that our best way of protecting the American people was something called assured destruction.
Right.
I don't know what the listeners what that is, but basically it's a threat of mutual suicide with the Soviet Union, which most people thought kept us safe throughout the Cold War. I must say I was a skeptic throughout that period, but nevertheless, the people during the Clinton years, and unfortunately after that, made it illegal as a matter of policy to defend the American people. And I fear that there are a lot of people in the federal establishment today that still adhere to that practice. Bill Middendorf was a personal friend, too, and I know he was really, he tried his best during the short period when we had some, when Yeltsin was the president, I guess it was, of Russia, of trying to get started working together. And I think we had a real chance of making a longstanding difference. But that was thrown in the trash when the Clinton crowd came in and made that the cornerstone of stability, is what they referred to it as. Mutual assured destruction is a cornerstone of strategic stability. And they went back to that mode of thinking. And in the meantime, while we have now woken up a bit to building serious defenses, and I'm really of the Navy's Aegis system, which I was able to help get started on my watch. It is the best, in my judgment, global missile defense that we have today. That and the Israeli systems, which also got the major start on my watch.
Yeah.
So defenses make a big difference. We know they will, not only in combat, but also in deterring, I believe, deterring adversaries who might be willing to risk attacking us and leaving, and in our defenseless state, we would be vulnerable too.
Yeah,
so we've got a lot of recovery, both in education to deal with this problem, as well as real capability in the private sector.
It's remarkable. There was a think tank in the Pentagon, which was created 40 years ago, specifically to study the Chinese threat. And over the years, it early on saw the China threat. And then during the Obama years and through much of the Trump years, even as President Trump was clearly echoing how important the China threat was, this think tank kept producing study after study suggesting, we don't really need to worry that much about China. And it seems like so much of official Washington has bought into the idea that the Chinese are still behind us. They're never going to catch up. But then you hear. What the Rear Admiral said, you hear what Chris Wray said a year ago about how much China has stolen its way to the front of technological innovation. If we get to a point where we start to agree, Democrat and Republican alike, that we have a problem, we have fallen behind, what are the three or four steps that you, as a strategic thinker, somebody who's been thinking this way for 40 years, what are three or four steps America needs to do to try to catch up and to put itself on a defensive par with China?
Well, I think we have to revive our serious space programs. I would put very high priority on that. We haven't talked about it, but have you heard of Brilliant Pebbles? Do you know what that was?
I have not, no.
Okay, well, on my watch, we began that program too, and we determined that it was possible to deploy a large number of very small satellites, very smart satellites that could maneuver and carry on board the sensors and the computing power to perform intercepts in space, beginning of launches and while rockets were still rising from their launch pads all the way through flight and to where they could return to the Earth. Now, today, with what Elon Musk is doing with his SpaceX program, we're seeing that played out in real time, that inherent capability. Not for missile defense, because it's all about commercial interests.
Right.
And that's where the cutting edge, in my judgment, is today, is in the private sector. But we knew 30 years ago in the late 1980s how to do this job with space-based defenses. And we even, if you ever go to the Smithsonian, well, let's, let me back up. During the latter days of my watch, some Democrats on Capitol Hill, including Les Aspin, who became Secretary of Defense, and Sam Nunn, who chaired the Armed Services Committee, made it very clear to me they were going to kill the Brilliant Pebbles program. So I called into my office some key people and said, invent for me a program that we can space qualify this key technology that Lawrence Livermore Laboratories actually had developed, and for some other reason. And they put together a program. It was called Clementine, which returned ultimately to the moon for the first time in a quarter century and mapped the moon's surface in I don't remember how many million frames of data and a number of spectral bands. And actually, they were the ones on that mission that discovered water in the polar regions. NASA has claimed that they did it, but you can go to the Smithsonian downtown Washington next to the lunar lander. You can see a replica of the Clementine spacecraft that actually did that work. I got the people at Naval Research Labs to lead it, because if I had put the people in charge at Lawrence Livermore Labs, the Capitol Hill would have killed it.
Yep.
Well, in any case,
we used the purse string, right?
Yeah. When Clinton administration came in, Les Aspin within weeks said, we're taking the stars out of Star Wars, and he scuttled all of the technologies that we were pursuing at that time, and even turned loose, dispersed the technical community that had been working on that technology, and China got it. I mean, they actually captured it, whether you want to refer to it as buying their way in or whatever.
Right.
But by way of small companies, Surrey in particular in the Great Britain was the pathway of the Brilliant Pebbles technology to the Chinese. And that was in the 1990s. So here you go. They have been working these issues now for 20 plus years,
right? Yeah.
And our private sector, which is our hope for the future, quite honestly, in my judgment. I don't have any confidence in the federal government at this point. They have become so bureaucratic and their thinking is so stale that I'm not sure that we can keep up. Wow. And our only hope is in the private sector and the technologies that are being pursued. If we could only get a leader that would pull those issues together in a coherent way. I wish I were 20 years younger.
Well, you still are an articulate and powerful voice in this space. How do we protect the grid? So we get a space program going is one of your recommendations so that we can defend against these attacks using modern day space technology. What about all those power lines you were talking about? What sort of hardening of defenses can we do there?
Well, we know how to do that. This just doesn't require an invention. Another shadow in my closet, a skeleton or whatever, was when I got involved in nuclear weapons effects at the Air Force Weapons Laboratory. At the time, we discovered catastrophic, potentially, EMP was. We knew on the high-altitude test that we conducted in South Pacific that there was going to be EMP, but we were surprised by the magnitude of that threat and immediately became so highly classified that you couldn't discuss it. I couldn't
talk to
my wife of doing, oh, absolutely. And we went to work to protect our most important strategic systems. Our Minuteman, the sea launch ballistic missiles, our bombers, the command and control systems that assured that the president could control these systems, we protected them against EMP. But we did not protect the electric power grid nor any other of the key critical civil infrastructure against them. And that's the problem we've run into. The EMP commission was established. Roscoe Bartlett, when he was...
Congressman from Maryland, right?
Maryland, and Kurt Weldon, who chaired the...
Defense Appropriations Committee, right?
One of the armed services, I believe it was. But in any case, they got the EMP commission set up. And if you haven't talked with Peter Pry, Peter's the guy who's been associated with that activity ever since then. At the time, I think he was still a staffer up on Capitol Hill, but very knowledgeable. And the EMP Commission was made up of a lot of really good technical people who had lived with this problem during the period I'm talking about.
Amazing.
Bill Graham chaired the commission as a lieutenant at the Air Force Weapons Laboratory when I was there. And he was working the EMP issues, and he chaired the EMP Commission. So we know how to deal with this problem. And in a project we did in South Carolina, just working with the local authorities, did an assessment of the distribution grid in York County, which is neighboring to Charlotte in North Carolina.
Right.
And of the hardness that needed to be provided in the distribution grid there, it turned out to be like $100 per York County citizen. Now, I've been to dinner this week a couple of times with my wife, and I spent $100, you know, but that's a one-time cost to protect the grid. So we know how to do it. We know we can afford it. The problem is purely bureaucratic and whatever you want to call it, political. And I don't know how we take a two-by-four to these people in Washington to begin to deal with this issue. Part of the problem is it's very complicated. We've got a regulatory system in which the federal agents are not responsible for regulating the activities within the states. Every state has its own regulatory committee organization with respect to the distribution grid, which is the bulk of our the most of our grid, even though the bulk power grid is regulated by the feds. So, and that's why that's being addressed, however inadequately it's being done. It's all in the bulk power grid, the transmission lines and the power stations. And the local part can be afforded and done, and it's a political problem. And the energy companies themselves pay for a lot of the regulatory work that goes on. You mentioned Texas. Bob Hall is a state senator in Texas, and if you want to talk to him, I can maybe set that up. He was in the Air Force as a junior officer at the same time I was, working on Minuteman III to harden it to EMP. He knows what needs to be done, and he has now tried for three sessions of Texas legislature, and as you probably know, they meet only every other year. So it's for 6 years he's been trying to get that problem dealt with for the EMP threat and other threats to the grid, and without much success, I have to say. So it's appalling. And one of these days it's going to happen. The sun will assure it happens at some point. We won't know when that's going to occur, and it does, but it will take down the grid. And, you know, it's in God's hands then as to what happens. But in the meantime, we have a number of adversaries that also can do that.
Remarkable to hear you say that you, who work so eloquently and successfully in the United States government through the military and through all of our key institutions to keep us safe during the Cold War, now you look at the United States government and you see a government that's incapable of really providing the security. And you're talking about, we know we're going to need the private sector, we're going to need Elon Musk, we're going to need other folks. How did our government become so incapable of handling the very first priority our founding fathers handed the federal government, which is to keep America safe? How did we get to that point that you can't trust the military to get the job of protecting America done because they're not thinking strategically anymore?
Well, I'm not sure how we got this way. Part of it really happened because we weren't paying attention.
Ignorance, right?
Where the expertise lay. And in fact, George Baker, that I've mentioned to you, once oversaw these programs in the Defense Department. And so he's well aware of what I've talked about and what it takes to protect the grid, and tried to make that happen in the NSC. So you can't point to just an institution. We ignored it deliberately. I think, as I've already said, Fukushima, I forget exactly how you say the name, Francis, anyway, you know, said it was the end of history and we were going to have peace in our time. And a lot of people went to sleep. And the Defense Nuclear Agency changed its name several times. It's now called the Defense Reduction Agency,
right.
I think it is.
Yeah, right.
And undertook an arms control role. In between, it was a defense special weapons agency, and it took more of an interest in chemical and biological threats back 20 or so years ago.
And less on this, right?
The heritage that Bill Graham and I grew up with went away in the Air Force. The weapons lab is off doing other things. They're doing good things with lasers, I think, now and maybe some other places. But the institutions of government that were once responsible, and we did nuclear tests, too, to understand what was going on, and we exposed our military systems to those tests so that we could validate our means. We haven't had a nuclear test now since 1992. So we just turned off. And I don't know what it's going to take to wake us up. And the reason I point to hope in the private sector is because at least they're not burdened down with a bureaucracy.
Yeah, they can move quicker. Such an important point. Well, Mr. Ambassador, your wisdom, first, your service to your country is unparalleled. And we thank you on behalf of all of our listeners and the readers of Just the News for your extraordinary service to your country, but also the wisdom here. We have become so short-sighted. We live in the moment in America, and there's very few people looking out 5 and 10 and 15 years at the threat set that we are about to encounter. And it is such an honor to have someone on this show that's doing that daily, still being a cogent voice in the security space for the good of our country. We are deeply grateful for all that you do for us.
Well, thank you very much, John.
And we're going to follow up on this issue. I'd like to get back in touch in a few weeks and a few months and get an update, because we got to be watching this very, very closely.
Thank you very much. Look forward to it.
Thank you, sir. It's been an honor to talk to you. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up for the day. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right. You heard me right. 4 years for $30. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. What an interview. What a lot to think about that the ambassador gave us. Ambassador Cooper is that light on a hill that is warning us of the danger that lies ahead. And the question that he asked is the same question that the Rear Admiral asked in that little quote I read from you, from Rear Admiral Studeman. Are we asleep? Are we asleep at the switch? Are we not paying attention to the clear and present danger, as Admiral Studeman said, about China and its capabilities, particularly as it relates to the grid vulnerabilities, as it relates to missile technology, as it relates to space technology? You heard the ambassador say, we went from being ahead to being behind. How alarming is that? We need to be dialed in, all of us. We need to hold to account our leaders who aren't paying attention to this. We need to sound off. We need to support the people who are making these issues known and fighting for funding and strategic concepts. You know, Congresswoman Elaine Luria, Democrat from Virginia, Senator Ron Johnson, we've mentioned. There are a handful of people, Rear Admiral, who are speaking the truth and trying to clamor the pans, try to get our attention, but there isn't a whole lot in people. We'd rather talk about woke issues and change curricula when, in fact, the extraordinary integrity and security of the United States is in clear and present danger, according to the man whose job it is to watch it, right? Admiral Mike Studeman, the top U.S. intelligence officer for the military in the Asia-Pacific region, says, we are not ready. We are asleep at the switch. He's not alone in saying that. Many, many other people to this Congresswoman Luria, Democrat, right? Wrote in the Wall Street Journal just 3-4 weeks ago, does the Pentagon take China seriously? Wow. That's a big, big question that someone who knows, a Democrat, challenging this Pentagon under the Biden administration. They're not thinking strategically enough China. That's what the experts are telling us. That's why we have this show, to give you warnings and harbingers and information and facts that you might not be getting from the rest of the media. We're so grateful you listen. Tomorrow, we're going to have another fun show. We've got some media personalities coming on later this week, and we've got Jenny Beth Martin, one of the great leaders of the Tea Party movement, who has been instrumental in supporting the Cuba freedom fighters and in the push to get Cuba liberated from its 6 decades of communism. She's going to be here tomorrow to talk about what happened at that incredible rally yesterday in Washington and so many other things that are on the front lines. Until then, let's take a break. Have a good night with your family. Enjoy that family dinner. Throw on some Kansas City steaks if you got them. Some wild Alaskan seafood. We know where all they are. They're great sponsors here at Just the News. Support them. You'll also reward yourself when you do that. They're amazing folks. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guaranteed. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.